Hi, it is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 22nd day of Adar Sheni, of the second month of Adar. We're going to see two responses today, because the first one is, they're both fairly short, and they both also bring us in contact with post-gim, with important rabbis who we don't often get to see. The first is from Shut Nishmat Chaim Siman Kuf Ayin Tet 179 by Rabbi Chaim Berlin, who was the chief rabbi of Moscow before he moved to Yerushalayim, and he was the older son, or one of the older sons, of the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. His younger, I think half-brother, was Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Started at Berlin, became Bar Ilan, who became the namesake of Bar Ilan University, and Rav Chaim Berlin came the namesake of yeshiva in Brooklyn that my father, Olav Shalom, went to, so it's a name that always reverberated in my head. We'll get to the second tshuva later. We'll talk about what that is when we get to it. Let's also make sure to pause to thank Rabbi Jack Abramowitz. You know, we're coming to the end of this series soon. Once we get to the end of Adar Sheni, I will have finished taping all of the responsa for the day, and the whole calendar will have an available responsa summarized in an audio shiur here at OU.org. So as we see the end of the line coming, let's really make sure to thank, maybe even email and thank, Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, David Hochhauser, and the OU at large. And you can make a financial donation to them too. I'm sure they would be willing to accept that to support their important work, not just in this area, but in lots and lots of areas. I'm Gideon Rothstein, and we're going to now learn from Rabbi Chaim Berlin in Nishmat Chaim about the topic is the Arei HaLevi'im, the cities of the Levi'im. This is from the 22nd of Adar Sheni. He says that the year is Shalom Rav Lamo. So I think he means all of those letters to be put together. That's the acrostic. That's the numerology version of the year, which if you can't figure it out, it works out to 648, which I think is what he means, which would have been the year 1888 when Rav Chaim Berlin was alive, so it fits, that would be right. So this was the 22nd of Adar Sheni of that year. The man who had written to him, I'd written him a letter before when he was the rabbi of Moscow, but he gets this letter in like some other small town, and he says, it's clear from your letter that you had written me another letter that I never got, because you're referring to stuff that I don't know about. In particular, questions about the Gemara and Sanhedrin. This man who was writing to him had wondered about a city called Yeter. It seems like it's called Yeter. It's Yud Tuf Resh, spelled without a second Yud after the Tuf. And that's mentioned as one of the cities of the Levi'im, that maybe this man suggests, Ulai lozohi ir yatir shenichtiva ba'arei Yehuda. The man who's writing him, we'll see it throughout the course of the letter, is trying to argue, once, you know, I'm noticing that phrasing a lot. His claim is that it doesn't make sense that so many of the cities that were given to the Levi'im would have come from the tribe of Yehuda, and therefore he argues that some of those cities that look like they're cities of Yehuda are actually other cities. Here, for example, there's a city in Yehuda, in Judea, in the section of Israel that was given to the tribe of Yehuda, called Yatir, Yud Tuf, Yud Resh, Yatir. And in the cities of Levi'im, there's a city pronounced Yatir, but it's written there without that second Yud, and therefore this man suggests, argues, claims, asserts, whatever the right word would be, that those aren't the same city. He made another claim about the city called Eshtemoa, which is written among the cities of the Levi'im, that in his view, he would prefer to understand it to be true, that Eshtemoa, spelled at the end of it with Mem Vav Ayin, Eshtemoa, is not the same city as Eshtema, where the last part of it after the beginning is Hehei, just in the cities of Yehuda. And then, if you could accept that claim, then those cities that are not these Judean cities, we could say, were cities from the tribe of Shimon. Because in the list, it looks like only one city comes from Shimon to the Levi'im, and like eight of them come from Yehuda, and he doesn't like that because he thinks it's unfair to Yehuda and doesn't take enough from Shimon. So he's trying to find ways around it, and the way he's suggesting around it is that maybe cities that look like they're the same cities as cities in the tribe of Yehuda really weren't. I should say, and I don't mind it, but I should say that this is, and you know, in Adar Sheni, there aren't so many options to choose from in finding responsa, because Adar Sheni only comes along 7 out of every 19 years, so that, you know, if I usually find about 38 or a little bit more options to pick from, in, let's say I found 57 options to pick from, and I picked those because those years divided by 19, so that would put me somewhere between 14 and 21 reasonable options in 22 of Adar, in Adar Sheni months, because 7 out of 19 is the same as 21 out of 57. So you get what you get. But in this case, not only do I get what I get, but it's a reminder that not all responsa are directly about specific halachic issues. This is going to be a response about how to understand Psukim in Tanakh versus in Tanakh about the giving of the city to Levim. We'll have some insights into halacha too, well, into the structure of the Jewish people in the land of Israel. But it's fundamentally about how do we understand Tanakh, and it's a reminder that there used to be great Torah scholars who cared about Tanakh as well. That's a joke. There are many, many great Torah scholars who care about Tanakh. This is an example of that. So, Rav Chaim Berlin says, you know, there's a pasuk that makes very clear that you are incorrect. Because when David HaMelech, let's remember there was a time in David HaMelech's life when he had to run away from Shaul, and at the very end of the time he had to run away from Shaul, meaning up until the time that Shaul died, the last year or two of that time before Shaul got killed in war, David found refuge with the Philistines, with one of the kings, one of the, you know, five rulers of Plishtim, and he would fake him out by attacking and wiping out cities of Amalek and other non-Jewish cities, and bringing him loot and booty for spoils of war to this king, you know, his tribute, and telling him he was taking it from the Jews, and that would let this Plishti think that, oh, David's really come over to our side. That's a different discussion, but there's a verse there. When David, so once every one time goes to war and he comes back and his city of Ziklag, I think it was his city of Ziklag, has been destroyed, and he goes off to war to avenge it. So in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Lamed, he sends some of his spoils of war to the Zikne Yehuda, to the elders of Judea, meaning of the tribe of Yehuda, who are his family in some extended sense. And there it says many of the cities of Yehuda that he sent these spoils to. And among them it says, and those in Yatir, and Yatir there is spelled Yud Tov Resh, without that second Yud. And Ulasher Be'eshtemoa, and those were in Eshtemoa. Now that Eshtemoa is spelled without the Vav, that was in the previous time, in the name of the city of the Levim, but it's not Eshtemoa with the Hey. So Rav Chaim Berlin is saying, so you look in Tanakh, if you just know enough Tanakh, you know these other psukim, you'll see, no, those are Judean cities. Now, there apparently, that would suggest that in the time of David, they hadn't yet given those cities to Levim, but in any case, they are cities in Judea. So when we later see them as being listed as cities of Levim, there's every reason to assume that those are coming from the tribe of Yehuda. So too, in Divrei Yamim, the first chapter, Divrei Yamim Aleph, in the fourth chapter, it's listing cities of the tribe of Yehuda, people of the tribe of Yehuda, but it says at Yoshbat Avi Eshtemoa. Now again, without a vav, but with an ayin, so it would make sense that Eshtemoa is the name of a person from Yehuda, and then therefore it should be a place of the city of Eshtemoa. I think that's right. And then for Beit Shemesh, which this letter writer also said, maybe that's also not part of Yehuda, maybe it was from Shimon, he says, I've got another pasuk in Malachim Bet Yudal, two kings, 14, Amatzia Melech Yehuda, goes to war with Yehoash, who was the king of the northern kingdom of Israel. And it says there explicitly they went to Beit Shemesh Asher Yehuda. Now that's not quite as good a proof, because it could be that tells you there was a Beit Shemesh that was in Yehuda, and maybe there's another Beit Shemesh not in Yehuda. But that's not in the letter here, so we won't go into that. So that's, so far his answer is, you've got all these nice ideas about how you can say that certain cities might not have been cities from Yehuda, and that'll fuel your thesis that maybe Yehuda didn't have to give up as many Arei Levim as it looks like in the Psukim. But each of your examples doesn't work. So then, let's deal with your real question. Your real question is, how could it be fair that you take eight cities? Remember, there are 48 Arei Levim. So you're taking a sixth of the cities of the Levim from Yehuda, from the tribe of Yehuda, and you're taking from Shimon one. Right? So why is that fair? So Rav Chaim Berlin says, I understand it's a pasuk in the Torah. When it's talking about the Arei Levim, the cities to be given to the Levim, the verse in the Torah says, Vehe Arim Asher Titenu, the cities that you should give, Me'chuzat B'nei Yisrael, from the inheritance or the heritage of the rest of B'nei Yisrael, the rest of the tribes of the children of Israel, Me'et HaRav Tarbu, U'me'et HaMa'at Tamitu. Take more from those who have more, and take less from those who have less. And from that's how you're going to decide who gives to Levim. And everybody who knows how the land was giving out to Eretz Israel knows that the biggest of all the tribes was Yehuda, and the smallest of all the tribes was Shimon. So therefore, that's the way the Nachala went. Yehuda had more Nachala, so he gave more, and Shimon had less, so he gave less. And if you think about it, if the Levim are going to get 48 cities, and Yehuda gives 8 of them, Shimon gives 1, that leaves 39 to be given, with 10 other tribes to give them. So there are 10 other tribes for 39 cities. That would mean on average they would give 4 each. So you can imagine, you know, if there's another tribe, the tribe that's second to Yehudah on their size, maybe they gave 7, and the tribes that are smaller, and whatever. So the numbers work out. Rav Chaim Berlin is saying that it's just a matter of how much you took, because depending on your size. So therefore, there's no real problem the fact that Yehudah is giving 8. It looks like a large number, but only because they were a large tribe. Now, all that doesn't yet answer, though, the question that came up in Sanhedrin 111b, where the Gemara says, well, how do you know that that's the way it went? Maybe it was 4.5 from this one, and 3.5 from that one. So it's weird that the Gemara would ask that, aside from everything else, not the propriety question, but the psukim, says Rav Chaim Berlin, give you the names of the cities and make it clear that it wasn't 4.5 and 3.5, it was 8 and 1. So what are you talking about 4.5 and 3.5? So even if it were true that there are cities that we don't know which tribe it came from, at the time nobody was doubting it. They knew all the cities, meaning how could the Gemara think of 4.5 and 3.5 of Al-Bimesh, Yehoshua, Yudah, they knew in the time of Yehoshua. So that's, by the way, a reminder that they gave the cities before. And so when David sends the cities of Judea, it probably means that they belonged to Levim, but it was sent to Judean elders who were also in their cities. We can talk about that another time because it's not in the Tshuva here. And that's problematic because in the Gemara there also it says, and let's name the cities, and they leave it as a question when there's an explicit pasuk. So I don't understand what you're talking about. So that's his problem. So therefore, he says, I want to suggest an idea. He talks about, v'ni marhiv oz b'nafshi, I'm gathering my boldness in my soul. So what he means is, I'm suggesting an idea. I can't prove this idea. It's just an idea that came to me. I don't have support for it. And therefore, it's a little bit bold of me to suggest it. But I'm suggesting because I think it might be true about what that Gemara in Sanhedrin is talking about. Because, he says, my starting point is that I understand I have a problem about that whole section of Yehoshua that talks about the cities of the Levi'im. Because once it tells you the names of every city from every tribe, that's true there in Yehoshua. If you look it up, you'll see that they list the names of the cities that were given to the Levi'im from each of the tribes. And then it counts them by number. Arim Tesha, Arim 9 cities, and 4 cities, and 8 cities, whatever it is, the numbers that they give. And usually in the Gemara, when they see a pasuk like that, in lots of other contexts, the Gemara will say, you already told me their names, why are you telling me their number? You don't think I could have counted myself? And therefore, Rav Chaim Berlin says, I want to point out a radak that I think helps me get to the answer here. The radak in Divrei HaYomim Aleph in the 6th chapter says, "U'b'sipur harei Leviim timtza shmot mishtanim misefer Yehoshua." One of the challenges of Divrei HaYomim, when I haven't studied this well at all, but I happen to know that it's one of the challenges, and the radak consistently deals with it, and radak has certain answers, and other commentators have different answers. I'm not saying what the right answers are. One of the challenges is that when you look in Divrei HaYomim at facts that are presented earlier in Tanakh, meaning Divrei HaYomim starts with the creation and goes to the end of, I'm pretty sure, to the destruction of the second temple, of the first temple, sorry, the first Beit HaMikdash, which is basically the end of Malachim Bet. So it's basically, in some very, very quick sense, for the Torah part of it, in some very, very quick sense, it recounts the history of the Torah starting from Bereishit. Goes all the way through. Now, it's more about the stuff from when the Jews, after the Jews had left Egypt, but it goes through stuff that's in the book of Yehoshua and the book of Shoftim and Shmuel. Goes through it, some of it quicker, some of it less quickly, because it's mostly about Malchei Yehuda, about what goes on with the kings of Judea, but it goes through it. So when it repeats, and key for our discussion, it goes through it and changes some details, or the details are changed. There are differences among the details. Among the, some names of the change. So that's where the Radak comes in. The Radak says, when it comes to the names of the cities of Levi'im, you'll see that their names here are different than the names in Yehoshua. And he says, there are those who explain that all those changes in names are because that at the time that the lot gave these cities to the Jewish people, and they were then going to give them to the Levi'im, some of those cities were not yet conquered. Let's remember that even after Yehoshua passes away, the land of Israel isn't fully conquered. There were things that were left still. So Yehoshua comes in, he conquers a bunch of it, and he divides up the whole thing of it, and then parts of it are left for the Jews to finish up conquering after he leaves the scene. Radak is suggesting, therefore, that while they were still going and conquering those cities, some of which were cities of Levi'im, so Levi'im, when they were told which would be their cities of Levi'im, didn't actually get all those cities of Levi'im, so it could be, Radak suggested, that until then, they set aside other cities until they conquer the ones that were actually going to end up being the cities of Levi'im. And he says, Tosefta that says something very similar in Makot. Tosefta says, even though they set aside Shechem as a city of the Levim, lo hayta koletet. It didn't yet work to one of the functions of the city of the Levim, is that if somebody has sadly killed somebody else, Bishogeg, he claims Bishogeg without full intention, unwittingly, such that he's not liable for the death penalty, and there's a Goel Adam who's chasing him and wants to kill him. So it happens to be true that if somebody runs, not only do we always talk about a city of refuge in Ir Miklat, but if somebody runs to any of the cities of the Levium, so that there are differences, very interesting differences between the cities of the Levium and the Ir Miklat, not our topic today, but one of them is that you have to declare that you want it to be kolet. You have to declare, I want this to serve in my refuge, and then it does. So, but the Tosefta says, back to the response of the Tosefta says, that Shechem wasn't koletet at that time. Rav Chaim Berlin is suggesting, based on the Radak, that it's because, or the Radak is suggesting by citing this Tosefta, that it's because it wasn't yet conquered. So, if Rishu Kiryat Yarim Tachteha Achi Kipshu. So, it says it here in the Tosefta, that they separated as a city of Levim, Kiryat Yarim, until they would finish the conquest and conquer Shechem. And he goes through, and the Tosefta goes through a couple of other examples. So, says Radak, Al Kol Panim. You see, when they set aside at least the Ari Miklat, those examples are all Ari Miklat, actual cities of refuge. There were lots of them that were not yet able to be used as Ari Miklat because they weren't yet conquered. So maybe the same thing applies to cities of Levium, and their names were by the lot. And so some of them they hadn't yet conquered. So therefore they set aside other ones, and those are the different names that you have in the book of Yehoshua, that you have here in Divrei Yomim. Divrei Yomim is giving you, and then it'll turn out that, well, the Tosefta refers to completely different cities, right? Shechem and Kiryat Yarim are not names you're going to confuse with each other. Here the Radak is suggesting that when you see similar but not the same names in Divrei Yomim for cities of Levim, so those are really the other cities. Those aren't the same cities. There are other cities that had very, very similar names, but that were separated out temporarily until they conquer the actual cities of Levium. So that's the process that's being suggested. And all, for all of the tribes, in the book of Yehoshua, they're suggesting until then, I'm sorry, that in Devarim, they're suggesting the real cities of Levium, and Yehoshua, they're suggesting the cities that they used until then, that if you can't give, that for each tribe, if you can't give the actual city, then you'll give this other city that you can give now. So Yehudah and Shimon, who are in the psukim, they are counted together, meaning they're not separated out. And the reason they're not separated out is because the whole tribe of Shimon is swallowed up within the tribe of Yehudah, as the psukim make clear. The pasuk tells you there are nine cities that are supposed to go, and they name the nine cities. Eight of those were from Yehudah, as it says in Bamidbar, made a Rav Tarbu, that you give more from the people who have more. And Yehoshua then lists nine cities that are going to be from these two tribes, that if it's not yet possible to use the real cities, you'll use these. Now the Gemara is suggesting that in Yehoshua, it doesn't say that those substitute cities, those temporary cities, should be eight from Yehuda and one from Shimon. Meaning that since it's only a temporary matter, says Jess Rav Chaim Berlin, since it's only a temporary matter, perhaps Yehoshua said, you know what, for a temporary time, you can take more from Shimon, even though Shimon is smaller, and therefore this and this and this, but maybe that's what you could do. You take not only eight from Yehuda and one from Shimon, maybe you do it the other way, maybe you take four from Yehuda and four from Shimon or something like that. And that's because it's all part of the same territory anyway. There's no need to be so careful about it since it's only temporary. So then the Gemara says, that's where the Gemara comes in to say, well, if they can do that, then maybe they could even have four and a half cities come from one, and four and a half cities come from the other, and that would mean that you can split up a city. So the discussion, part of the point of the discussion where there was, can you split up a city into half Ari Levium, half of a city of Levium, half of not? And it says, no. The idea that they can give together is because you don't split up cities among tribes. So therefore, there's no way that even one of the cities is going to be in Ir Levim. Maybe it was half from one and half from another, meaning to make it fair. So the point of Yehoshua was just they could give as they wanted to. You could give four from one, five from another, six from one, three from another, but you couldn't give four and a half and four and a half because that's impossible, and that's discussion of the Gemara there. So Rav Chaim Berlin suggested to respond to this man's claims is, A, the cities, in fact, were not given equally from all tribes. They were given based on a pasuk in the Torah. The tribes gave more depending on their population. That meant Yehudah ends up giving eight, and Shimon ends up giving one, but based on a Radak and a Tosefta, there seems to have been an intermediate period of time before the entire land was conquered when you would give substitute cities if the cities of Levim were not yet conquered. Those substitute cities, in the case at least of Yehuda and Shimon, didn't have to come in the right biblical proportions because Yehuda and Shimon were all one large territory, since Shimon was actually encompassed completely within Yehuda, like I think today Lesotho is completely surrounded by South Africa. It's a country that's completely held within South Africa, or Vatican City is certainly completely held within Italy. Yehuda Shimon was completely held within. So for the Ari Levim that are going to be the real Ari Levim, the permanent, eternal Ari Levim, cities of Levim, there it was 8 from Yehuda and 1 from Shimon. But when it came to temporary substitutes until the whole territory was conquered, that could come in different proportions, even equally from them. But even then, it was not true that any city would be split between two tribes, as the Gemara's claim, and therefore it couldn't be 4.5 and 4.5 from Yehuda and Shimon. It would have to be some other numbers from them. And that is the response of Rav Chaim Berlin for the 22nd of Iyar of 1888, dealing with how we learn Tanakh, and how we understand the process of splitting up the Ari Levim way back when. That's our first response. Then, I could just stop early, but, and you know, I have a year's worth of having gone overtime when I almost never went under time, but there's a really brief response in Shu'ot Or Letzion Chelek Aleph, Orech Chaim Siman Mem Tet, Volume 1, Yerachayim section, response 49. So, Rav Ben Sion Abba Bar Shaul, who was the Rosh Hashiva Parat Yosef, a good friend of Ravad Yosef's. They were contemporaries in yeshiva, and throughout their lives they were friendly. So he was asked about the following question. On years where regular Purim, meaning Purim outside of Yerushalayim, happens on Friday, so Yerushalayim was called a Purim Mishulash. They have like a triple Purim. So they read the Megillah on Friday like everybody else in the world. And on Shabbos, they don't say Hallel, but they read the Torah like for Purim, and they say Al HaNisim for Purim, and then on Sunday, they have their Seuda. They give out Mishloach Manot, I'm pretty sure. On Friday, they give out the Matanot Levyonim, and on Sunday, so they have a three-day Purim. Question is, on that third day, on that Sunday, if somebody sadly is in Avelut, do they function in their Avelut on that day? Meaning, when it's actually Purim, we don't have Avelut, we don't like have Shiva calls, even though you're in Shiva, you don't get up from Shiva, but you don't actively express your Avelut. So on the 22nd of Adar Bet of Tafshin Lamed Gimel of 1973, he's answering a question about that question. What does Yerushalayim do in terms of Avelus on the 16th of Adar, right? It's the day after Shushan Purim, and the Seuda has been pushed off to Sunday. So Rav Ben Sion Abba Bar Shaul says he hasn't found anything specific about that in Sefarim. So he says, I think the sides of the doubt are, when we say you pushed off the meal, is it just the meal you pushed off? If you transport a festive meal to that new day, so meaning that Sunday of that year is not a Purim in any way, it's just a day to have a meal for Purim, but it's only the meal that makes it special. Or do they say they made it into a Yom Mishteh V'Simcha? Do they transfer the whole aspect of the whole day? Why is that going to be relevant to our question? Because if it's going to affect the whole day, if it's part of how you define the day, so then you understand. You define the day as a day of Purim. It's a Sunday. Usually it's the 16th of Adar, which doesn't usually get any of the qualities of Purim to it. In this case, it does, and therefore you'd say you can't have mourning. So he suggested it's a dispute between the Ran and the Nodeb Yehuda. That's already a surprising comment to make, because usually Acharonim, later authorities, past the time of the Shulchan Aruch, don't argue with earlier authorities. In this case, so we'll see. The Ran says that when Purim happens on Shabbos, you push it off to Yom Aleph. So when he says you push it off, it sounds like you're pushing off the whole thing to make the Sunday a Yom Mishteh V'Simcha. And you have a similar idea on Tisha B'Av. Let's suppose Tisha B'Av has been delayed, right? When Tisha B'Av happens on a Shabbos, we don't fast on that Shabbos. We don't observe anything about Tisha B'Av on that Shabbat. We push it off. So when we push it off, the Ran generally assumes, and we generally assume, that Sunday pretty much has the whole character of Tisha B'Av. Not just, we don't just say, well, you happen to be fasting because you didn't get to fast the previous day. We put everything. We put all the practices of mourning over the destruction that we have, and we experience it as a whole day. But the Nota Behuda thought that wasn't true. He thought, and he thinks it's connected to the fact that Pesach and Tisha B'Av are the same day of the week, and therefore, if you did the fasting of Tisha B'Av on the wrong day, I mean, he says, really, you should have fasted on Friday. But if you fasted on Friday, people would think that we get the wrong idea about when Pesach started, and therefore, they might end up eating chametz on Pesach, and therefore, they pushed it off to Sunday. He makes it sound like it's just a fast, and the only the fast parts of it were pushed off to Sunday. If only the fast parts of Tisha were pushed off to Sunday, then you would argue, although he doesn't say that explicitly, I think, that you would push off only the eating part of the holiday of Purim to Sunday, and then theoretically you could observe Avilut. But, says Rav Bar Shaul, or Rav Abba Bar Shaul, I don't remember, never know what part of that is his last name, but, and if you know, you can email me. My email is grothst@gmail.com. He says you should pass it like the Ran, first of all, because the Note of Yehuda thing notices that what his opinion doesn't fit with the riff, but also I think he says he doesn't think that the Note of Yehuda's idea is so convincing. He doesn't say, oh, I would have said, because the Ran is a Rishon and the Note of Yehuda isn't, and we generally would pass it like a Rishon over an Achron. So in any case, it would also be true, he points out, that if you didn't say what he's saying, that you would push off the whole day to Sunday, at least in terms of being a Yom Mishteh V'Simcha, it would mean that that year, the people of Yerushalayim would never have a Yom Mishteh V'Simcha, but the book, the Megillah, had established that there should be a Yom Mishteh V'Simcha every year. So you'd be losing that. Now, there is a part of what the Nevi'im established in Megillat Esther that we don't keep anymore. Based on the Gemara early on in Masechet Megillah, the Gemara understood that the Megillah tells us that you could theoretically have more days, on which you could read the Megillah, because there was an idea made that people lived in small towns and didn't often go into the big cities. So it's all a question of how it works. But basically, they were allowed to read the Megillah on the Monday or Thursday before what big cities would call Purim, meaning big cities will celebrate Purim on the 14th of Adar, walled cities will celebrate on the 15th of Adar, and people from small towns who travel into the big cities only irregularly, only on market days, Mondays and Thursdays, would be allowed to read it on the Monday or Thursday prior to when Purim is going to happen. So in the longest stretch of it, if Purim is going to be on a Sunday, then the Farim, the small towns, could read it on the prior Thursday, which would be the 11th of Adar. So the point is, there are many, many days. We don't do that anymore, right? So when we don't do that anymore, you could say to me, well, isn't that something the Megillah established, you're not going to do it? Because that was a claim that the Rav Bar Shaul was saying about, if you're not going to say that the whole day becomes, of the Sunday, becomes a day of Mishteh V'Simcha, the people of Yerushalayim that year will have not had a day of Mishteh V'Simcha, because Friday was just a day to read the Megillah. Shabbos was just a day, was not a Purim day, because you don't have Purim on Shabbos. And then Sunday is just the feast day. You never have a day of Mishteh V'Simcha. Counter-argument to that could be, well, but you got rid of the whole idea of the Kfarim. So he says, no. The small towns was a leniency for them, because it's hard for them to put together a Megillah reading and a minyan, so we had a leniency. So the fact that over time we've gotten rid of that leniency, the Megillah never said you must do that. It created a loophole. They created a right to do that if you needed to. And therefore, he thinks that the people in the walled cities, when Purim, mostly Yerushalayim, when Purim gets pushed off to Sunday, it's like a day of Mishteh V'Simcha. Nonetheless, he thinks that even though he thinks you pasken like the Ran, that's really the whole day, he still thinks you actually end up having to observe Avilut, which would not have been the way he started off the responsum, but he thinks you do. And the reason he thinks you do is, now we see situations where there are times of Avilut, of mourning, that even if it's a holiday for somebody, they don't push it off. So an example would be, now, mourning is pushed off by full holidays, but that's not what we're talking about in these situations. But let's say you have a man who had a baby, and the baby boy, and it's the day of the circumcision of the baby boy on the Tisha B'Av. We call it a Yom Tov Shelo. It's like a private, personal holiday for him, but it nonetheless doesn't push aside Tisha B'Av. But it does push aside a Tisha B'Av that's Nidcha, that's pushed off to Sunday. So even though it's clearly true when it comes to Tisha B'Av that we don't take just the fasting limit, we take the whole character of the holiday according to the Ran, and we put it on the Sunday, so you would have said, so that shouldn't be able to be pushed aside by his holiday, because on a regular Tisha B'Av you wouldn't. But since it's a Nidcha, so Rav Bar Shaul is saying, when you have a Nidcha, it doesn't get the full character, even if it's supposed to be the whole day being celebrated. How do you know? In Tisha B'Av, if you have a Baal Brit, a father of a son who's having a breed, so it's true that Tisha B'Av, he can't push about Tisha B'Av usually, but a Tisha B'Av Nidcha, he does push aside in his own practice. So then, if you apply that now to happy occasions, even though normally the personal mourning of one member of the Jewish people doesn't allow them to ignore the public festivities of Purim, and therefore they have to sort of suspend their Avelut for the purposes of Purim, but if the public festivities are pushed off a day, even though it's the festivities, it's the full festivities, it's the whole day that's a day of festivity, but it's pushed off. So Rav Bashul says that nidche idea would also apply here. A little bit more to the tshuva, but I'm going to stop here because I can be on time. This has been a responsive day for the 22nd day of Adar Sheni. Thank you to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hochhauser. We have seen Rav Chaim Berlin upon issues of the cities of Lviv. We've seen Rav Ben Tzion Abba Bar Shaul about the fact that he thinks when Yerushalayim celebrates a nidcha, a pushed-off holiday of Purim, that somebody who's an avilut will sadly have to keep that avilut because their personal avilut does, in fact, push aside or get in the way of that day of feasting. My name is Gideon Rothstein. Thank you for joining me. 22nd of Adar, a responsum a day.